Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
When the center of the storm is not one Alberta team, but two Alberta teams are the center of drama in the National Hockey League. Thus, it is so dramatic that we need two separate podcasts to cover this. Welcome to the crossover edition of the Shifts and Pucks and Fireside Chat Part 2. I'm Kevin from Shifts and Pucks. You can follow us at Shifts and Pucks, Facebook.com, Shifts and Pucks, YouTube.com, Shifts and Pucks, Twitch.com, Shifts and Pucks. Subscribe wherever you got your audio as well. And we are here crossing over with Fireside Chat. Hello, Matt from Fireside Chat. How are you today?
Oh, good. The Flames and Oilers certainly aren't, but, you know, I'm doing all right.
That's good. It's good you are doing all right. And we've got a lot of ground to cover. We will have some dramatic entrances, it sounds like. We may get a dramatic entrance from Dan. We may get a dramatic entrance from Devin. Who knows might dramatically enter this chat. Of course, Matt, just to tell everyone that doesn't know about Fireside Chat where to find you first. We'll do this at the end again as well. But
yeah, on all the same platforms as you at firesidechat.ca, and our website's firesidechat.ca.
Fair enough. Good. So this is basically, you're going to get the same episode on Shifts and Pucks and Fireside Chat. So we're live now on the Shifts and Pucks stream, and this will be uploaded onto the Fireside Chat stream. But let's go through the week, and we will start with the game on Tuesday against the Nashville Predators. It was every game with the Flames this week had a little bit of some spice of drama, and it started on Tuesday. The Flames were down 2-0 to the Nashville Predators. And with about 3-4 minutes left in the second period, Jonathan Huberdeau was moved from left wing to bench door opener and remained in that position for the remainder of the game, with a long, forlorn, lost love look in his eyes. But the Flames came back. They scored four in the third, led really by Blake Coleman, who overall might have been the best Flame over one of the better Flames this week, with a 4-2 win over the Predators. Dan, I guess just before we get into the Huberdeau specific part of this, what were your thoughts on the game?
Well, even though in the first period, I thought the Flames played adequately. And we're kind of, I thought, a little unfortunate to be down 2-0. I did not think that Nashville had a ton of chances in the first period. It just so happened that the ones that they did have, they capitalized on. And by and large, I thought the Flames just controlled the play throughout the contest and eventually were able to break through as the game went on, and late in the second with Dylan Dubé scoring, and then two in quick succession early in the third to take the lead, and just went on from there.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't play bad in the second or the first, pardon me, and, you know, kind of grinded their way through, and they found a way a little to kind of come back based, you know, they did this in Seattle, and they did this later in the week as well, where they were able to kind of get their legs and...
Yeah, they had a little bit more effort and jam than they have early in the season, where especially the depth guys and the new young rookie guys were stepping up in this contest and showing more as the game went on. And that was what led to Huberdeau getting benched, because he was particularly struggling in the second period, and everybody else was kind of going at full cylinder.
Yeah, I would agree that he, well, I mean, obviously everybody would agree that he was certainly struggling, and it's been a struggle since he's been here for the most part. And he just didn't seem right. He couldn't get a pass going, and were you surprised that he was benched?
No, and it's one of those things that, by and large, it's this is going to sound weird. It's not really Huberto's fault that he's struggling. He just does not fit with the Flames' way of generating offense. Because hearkening back to when he was with the Florida Panthers, he was very much an east-west player and would require his line mates to crash the net to create space for passing lanes, and he would find people, whether it was the trailing defenseman or the guys crashing the net, he would find those guys. But with the Flames having a very north-south way of attacking, there's no time and space for him to actually make any creative passes. And it basically, the Flames system is systematically designed in a way to hamper Huberto from generating anything. And it's hard for him to adapt because that's how he's played his entire career, rather effectively. And yet, you know, it's just not working.
I can see that. I thought Chris Tanev made has been credited with this quote on Elliot Friedman's 32 Thoughts, where he said that with Huberto, the problem is he hasn't figured out the Western Conference yet. It's an interesting comment because, I mean, you do see a lot of players from the Eastern Conference struggle when they enter the Western Conference because it is a different style of play overall when you're playing that way.
Yeah.
And I think that that's in part where Huberto is, like I've said this before, I'll say it again, I still think Jonathan Huberto is a good hockey player. I don't think that this...
Yeah, same here. I still think he's a player that's capable of being the $10 million player. It's just having to figure out some way of getting it to work within the system that the Flames have.
Yeah, and he doesn't, unfortunately, part of the problem is he's not working with any of the centermen who the Flames have, which is whether that be Backlund, Lindholm, or Kadri. I don't know if they've really tried him with Backlund, but I mean, it's not, I don't think.
A little bit last year, but not much.
Yeah, but he certainly doesn't work with Kadri, and I think Lindholm and Huberto are trying to find some chemistry, but it just clearly isn't working. And, you know, just to go on a little bit of a tangent here, and I think just as we head into the week here, okay, but maybe let's talk about the Toronto game first, because I think that this will illustrate where
I agree.
So it was the Leafs jumped out to a 4-1 lead, and the Flames battled their way back, and Mitch Marner in the shootout loses the puck, regains the puck, and scores, and the Leafs come away with a 5-4 win, which it was a fun hockey game to watch. But the Flames don't come away with 2 points; they come away with one. But just in terms of that game, that was Elias Lindholm's best game in a while. And the reason I bring this up into connection with Huberto is part of Huberto's problem. And I love Elias Lindholm, but I can't say that he's had a great year. He's gone 9 games without a goal. We'll get to his play in the Ottawa game, but he certainly looked good in this Leafs game. He had a lot of chances, but that was probably one of his better games. And that really, in terms of where I thought Huberto had, in terms of a response, I thought he had a pretty solid game overall against the Leafs. Anyway, that line.
Yeah, I agree. And frankly, if Lindholm had any finish in him in that contest, he might have got a hat trick.
Yep.
Like there was at least 5 or 6 chances that Huberto set him up for a tap in, and for whatever reason, it just didn't work. And and I think that's been systematic with Huberto. Is that, like, he does actually get those great A chances for the other team players on his line, but it just, they're not ready for it, or they're not anticipating that he's going to fire the pass off. Like, in the overtime, Huberto had a clear line to the net, and he passed it over to Lindholm, and if Lindholm was expecting the pass, Like, that was an easy, just lift it up over the pad and you've won the game. But Lindholm was not anticipating that Huberdeau was going to fire the pass over to him, which, you know, like, if you've seen any of Huberdeau from when he was with Florida, you know that that pass was coming because, you know, but it's, yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, that the end result was that the Flames lost. And, you know, it's frustrating. And, like, you know, a game like that for Huberdeau, like, I'm sure that, you know, like, he had a statement game in that one that, like, hey, I am actually doing what I can. And then his line mates let him down and he goes pointless in the game.
Yeah. He had even an assist in that game, I thought. Yeah, he did.
Okay, he did have an assist.
Yeah,
my mistake.
But for the other there, before we get to the elephant in the room, there was another story in that game, and it was really because before the week, on Wednesday, the Flames called up Dustin Wolf from the Wranglers. There was, and a lot of people went, wait, what's happening? And it turns out that Jacob Markstrom's day to day. So Dan Vladar got the starting goal, and I thought he had a tough start, but I thought he battled his way back in the second half and he cost the Flames a point and gave the Flames a point, if that makes any sense. It's funny, Matt. I think that he struggles at the start. I've always kind of noticed that with him. He doesn't get off to the greatest start. He seems to be battling. He seems to battle a puck. But as the game goes on, he seems to get a little bit more comfortable. And that Toronto game was an example of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then we had So let's go to after the game. You've heard some pretty positive things out of the locker room from Nazem Kadri, who's, I think, playing a lot better the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Ken Zbigniew, who I also think has been playing a lot better the last couple of weeks. And yeah. I think, you know.
Well, and you look at Connor Zary coming up, you know, and he's found a home on that line with Kadri and kind of reinvigorated all three of the players on that line, and they've been excellent ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. But then this story comes out shortly after the game. Kevin Week breaks the tweet, or whatever we call it now on social media, but Nikita Zadorov has requested a trade from the Calgary Flames through agent Dan Milstein. Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly responded that Vancouver will be one of the teams that will be involved. Pierre LeBrun from TSN confirmed it. And it became the story of the story of the weekend. And I think we have to kind of stop here and pause and talk about this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start with me. I'll start here, and I'm curious what you think of this, but so I want to, like, you know, I gained a lot of respect for Nikita Zadorov this year when he came forward about the Russia-Ukraine thing. I think that took a lot of courage for him to speak out like that. And then Nikita Zadorov came out and called the team out essentially for not wanting to be there, for players not wanting to be there. He took some flack for it, but this is kind of like I had, you know, and but I also heard he wanted to stay in Calgary. He loved the city, he loved the team, he loves the organization. So I was stunned, quite frankly, to hear about this trade request, because this is completely opposite to what Nikita Zadorov was saying or claiming. And I feel like he comes across out of this like a little bit of a hypocrite. So he was able to call out his own teammates and challenge them to look in the mirror. But when the fact of the matter is, this was a trade request that he wanted, this can't comes out not from Nikita Zadorov, this comes out from the agent. And we hear from Zadorov after the Ottawa game, says that he let his agent do his business. This is what is confusing to me. Okay, fine, you want your agent to do your business and you're okay with whatever your agent is going to do. You knew damn well that this was going to come out, before the Toronto game. You clearly didn't talk to the Calgary Flames organization nor the players in the dressing room about this trade request. And then you barely are able to stammer out that you wanted to request a trade when the cameras are in front of you. So if you're going to call out your teammates and you're going to make this bravado statement about being a better teammate, you better damn well be a good teammate. And Nikita Zadorov was not a good teammate. And I'm really disappointed in him and how this was handled. And I don't think he needed to go public with this because the Flames probably would likely trade him by the trade deadline anyway.
Yeah, this is one of those things where, frankly, there's a lot wrong with this team. And like, how would you say it? I thought that Zadorov earlier in the year when he called out his teammates was a good veteran leadership play because, frankly, finally somebody, you know, like this team has really lacked somebody, you know, bitching out this team since the Iginla era and early Iginla era. And, you know, like everybody's been a little bit too polite, I think. And, you know, him calling out the team was the correct call. And then we saw that the team really didn't respond at all. And like the veteran players that were struggling, that have struggled all season, have pretty much, with except of Mackenzie Wieger and Nazem Kadri, like none of them have really stepped up in any measurable way. So it's one of those where, you know, like he's frustrated too. And like, I can understand him wanting a trade. And it's one of those where, you know,
it's like okay that you want a trade. You know what? Like, it really, I think going into this year, we knew that this was going to be a conversation at some point without not only Zadorov, but a number of Flames players. We knew this going in. But it's the way that this was handled, I think that this is, you know, I think this was kind of poorly handled on Zadorov's part. And, you know, yes, he's trying to put this as well. Milstein is the business guy, but you got to answer to the locker room. And, you know, again, you're going through this Toronto game and, you know, it's not fair to Craig Conroy to get this trip up on here, you know, that he's kind of
surprised.
And it's not fair to this organization. And really the person I feel the worst for right now is Michael Backlund. Here's this new captain. Well, and not here's this guy having to wear the C for this organization. He's put his heart and soul in not only to this organization, but the city of Calgary. And he's having to deal with this crap from Zadorov after I don't know, like maybe you think that this was a good thing, Matt, but I don't know if that resonated
well. Well, no, and how would you say, like, it is a slap in the face to the rest of the team. But frankly, they kind of deserve it as well. And, you know, like you see a bunch of players that are just playing for themselves with no, like nobody's actually pulling any weight together towards actually doing a damn thing. And, you know, you see other teams that actually seem to have a concept of how to actually play like a team. And, you know, like Zadorov is being pragmatic in saying, well, there is literally nobody here that is actually stepping up. Because nobody has, really, other than Kadri and Wieger. Like, where is anybody else? Like, Dubé has played terribly. Mangiapane is approaching a buyout candidate. You know, and the rest of the...
Mangiapane was leading the team in scoring. I'll look at the stature while you're chatting.
Yeah, he is, but still, like, he has not been very good either. And, like, none of the rest of the guys are showing anything at all. Like, the only guys that are actually playing well are Pospisil, Zari, and their line mates. That's it. And it's hard, you know, being pragmatic and wanting to actually be successful and have your efforts actually matter, you know, and you see the rest of your teammates not seeming to care at all. And, you know, like, I don't blame him. Like, if it was me, I would want out of this team too. And it's
okay, but how he handled this isn't the best.
Oh, I agree. It, no, and it's not the best way, but it's also, how would you say, trying to force, you know, some change to happen, because, like, frankly, this team has a huge amount of rot throughout the organization, and you just need to start clearing out what's not working. And, you know, it's one of those things that, frankly, you need somebody to be blunt and hit people in the face and say, wake up. And, you know, well, like,
The Flames had that. And this, some people in the fan base laughed at the people that were doing it. There were, was Trevor Lewis, Milan Lucic, Eric Gabranson, and a lot of them. Fan base, there's some in this fan base that was and I actually think Milan Lucic has looked pretty good in a Boston Bruin jersey. Trevor Lewis is looking good in a Los Angeles King jersey, and the Columbus Blue Jackets may not be very good, but I'll remind everybody, when Rasmus Anderson took that unnecessary hit on Patrick Laine, who was the first person that walked in and stood up to Rasmus Anderson?
Yep.
It was Eric Gabranson.
Oh, I know. Like, honestly, if it was me and being in Craig Conroy's role, I would actually, you know, sit down with Zadorov and hammer out a long-term contract extension and kind of turn the team over to him after, you know, shedding other players, because that is the right, like, how would you say, the necessity for this team to be actually accountable to each other is vital for any good team moving forward. And, you know, like, Zadorov is one of the key players that this team has that actually does that. And, you know, when he looks around the room and sees nobody else actually doing a damn thing, you know, it's tough, because, you know, like, it's hard to cycle out 20 players, and, you know, the Flames are going to be beginning the process of actually clearing out some of that this year and over the next few years.
Yeah, I guess here's where maybe I'm not going to defend Zadorov's action, but I think one of Zadorov's comments has been about ice time. And Matt, let's throw out a guess here. Who has the worst plus minus of all the Flames defense on this team? Which, by the way, includes, when I say this, I'm going to give spoil this. It is not Jordan Oesterle, and it is not Dennis Gilbert.
I'd probably go with Zadorov.
It is Noah Hanifin at minus eight. Zadorov is minus six, but Noah Hanifin, the man that is demanding a contract himself this offseason as a UFA, has 6 points, yes, but is a minus eight. So I think as Zadorov, I think that there is an argument if from Zadorov camp that he's played better than Noah Hanifin. I mean, he is a chaos giraffe at best, Nikita Zadorov, at times. You don't know what you're going to get. I mean, that's been the obvious identity. But I kind of want to say this about Noah Hanifin, and this is probably going to be in a minority unpopular. I don't know what I'm going to get from Noah Hanifin either. I think that that's part of the reason why they put Hanifin with Chris Tanev, because he's not the obvious chaos giraffe that Nikita Zadorov is.
Yeah.
But boy, there's been a lot of times I've seen him out of position.
Oh, I know.
Like, there are times he's in position and he looks wonderful. And when he's on. But when he's off, it is kind of scary, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that is good about this season for the Flames. And frankly, their poor start is a good thing long term. Because, you know, like, you're not locking yourself into 8 years of Elias Lindholm and 8 years of Noah Hanifin. And, you know, instead, you know, as much as it's going to suck to have the growing pains of some of the younger players coming up, whether that's Soloviev or, you know, Kuznetsov or Poirier later on in the year when he gets better, you know, like, this team, I think, just needs to start changing out the deck chairs and, you know, approach free agency with a bunch of money and, you know, try and change the team up and, you know, come at it again in a different way, because certain players like Hanifin have just been okay. Not great, not completely embarrassingly bad, but, you know, like it's one of those where the writing's kind of on the wall that this team just needs to shake things up all the way around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get to the Ottawa game, which kind of, yep, I think bridges us into this. So on the bus, with the Ottawa game happens, the Flames got off to a good start, outshot the Senators in the first period. Wasn't rewarded for it. Good game from Jonas Korpisalo. But this was also the debut of Dustin Wolf. And the way I saw this game is the Flames had, you know, there was a lot of offensive opportunities, a lot of criticism about, we'll get to Dustin Wolf in a second, but let's kind of to toss this back to Huberto for a moment and talk about depth chairs. And there was a lot of criticism on Jonathan Huberto's breakaway opportunity and that he didn't bury it. It looked like a poor effort. I just, like, for me, when I saw it, I think when he was going down, I don't think he saw the room that everyone else saw on the replay when he was looking at Korpisalo. I think he the best he could do was get a shot off. And I think he probably felt that defenseman that was behind him was a lot closer than maybe he actually was looking back. So it's, I think it's easy sometimes to criticize on the replay, but that's kind of what I thought when I saw. But I thought in this game overall, there were too many times that the Flames went lengthy periods without shots. There was a 9-10 minute time between the first and the second without a shot. And the first half of the third, there was a length of time without a shot. The penalty kill was good, although I thought Blake Coleman and Elias Lindholm took two very bad penalties back-to-back there. So the play in front of Dustin Wolf, I thought, was inconsistent, and Ottawa was deserving of the win.
Oh, I agree. Calgary looked very listless, kind of like the outdoor game where, you know, a little bit of effort in some parts of the game and then long stretches of nothing in other parts. And, you know, it's a shame that Wolf's season debut kind of got ruined by the effort in front of him, but, you know, giving up four goals, you know, that's going to happen to any goaltender when they're having a team that's not really doing anything. You know, yeah, the Zadorov trade request was kind of supposed to be like a wake-up call to everybody else, they responded by lying down, frankly, and being even worse.
Yeah, I think that there was it seemed in some places that there was a possibility. Well, Zadorov specifically on the 3-1 goal, he made a bad play in terms of like that giveaway in front. So, you know, I didn't think he had a great game considering all that was in front of him. I think the team looked a little distracted overall, but I want to kind of stick to the positive here, because I actually really did like Dustin Wolf, just the way he looked. He looked composed.
You can tell that this guy's going to be a good one for a long time.
Yeah. I see why. And it's never been for me that I've not seen that he's been an NHL goalie.
Yeah. Same here.
It's just, I think there's so many other, my jitters are Carter Hart. My jitters are, quite frankly, maybe even a little bit of Stuart Skinner, like just in, and I'm not comparing them, but I'm always worried about that. But he certainly stepped up to the point that I would actually give him Montreal. I would start him in Montreal over Vladar.
Yeah, same here.
Second game. And I would consider, if that goes well, giving him the Vancouver game as well. I would go on a run, a little bit of a run with Wolf and see what he could do.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those where, this is where having two good veteran goalies helps to foster Vladar a bit, or Wolf, I mean. If you're allowing him to get some regular starts, but having that veteran presence, whether you trade off Markstrom or Vladar as the season goes on, and have the other guy kind of stewarding Wolf into the starter position over the next couple of years, I think that's the ideal situation. Sort of like how Nashville played it when they had Pekka Rinne and UC Saros together, where they just let Rinne kind of run out his NHL career while being the starter and allowing Saros to get an increasingly larger amount of games. So that way, by the time Rinne was done, Saros took over, and Saros is one of the best goalies in the NHL.
Yeah, and I think that this I was just thinking about this now, Matt. Markstrom hasn't been hurt in 2 years, and Markstrom has been a frequently injured goalie. I think that the Flames wondered a little bit if there was going to be some health concerns with Markstrom, and I think that they told Wolf, look, you're going down, but it's a possibility that we're going to have a goaltender injury here, and you're going to play.
Even like in Dan and my's season predictions thread or comment section, we talked about Wolf playing 10, 15, 20 games this year, even with the other two guys being in the lineup still.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Wolf at least once this week, even twice.
Yeah.
This week. So that was pretty much the games in terms of what happened. I mean, I think a couple of other things I forgot to put this on the agenda, but I want to have this conversation a little bit, Matt, about Elias Lindholm. And then I want to talk a little bit about Mike Vernon. I also forgot about Mike Vernon, too, and I think we should acknowledge that.
Yeah.
But let's start on Lindholm here. I think he's struggling. I think that is it possible that he needs a change of scenery? Sure, yes. There was a lot of talk about, you know, when Gaudreau and Tkachuk left, that, you know, I don't think there was a lot of talk about how it impacted the team. I don't know if we talked about how this would have impacted Lindholm himself. And I think he's been through a very difficult time the last year and a bit. You've lost your line mates. The line mate that you were supposed to have success with, you didn't end up having success with. You do feel that you've been undervalued in terms of your league salary all over. I think there's a lot of the world is, I feel like I there's people differing with me on this one for sure, but I feel Elias Lindholm is a good hockey player that is playing with an unbelievable piano on his shoulder. And yeah. I think it's really hard for him right now. And if you're going to have sympathy for Jonathan Huberdeau after his benching, I think that you, Elias Lindholm, deserves some similar sympathy for what he's been through as well.
Oh, I agree. And it's one of those where it's frustrating because, you know, like it wasn't his fault that his line mates left. And it just, you know, and he's been trying to find chemistry again. It's hard when you're not meshing with another person and, you know, like things just aren't working because you try harder, the other guy tries harder, and when it still doesn't work, then, you know, like everybody's gripping their sticks too hard and, you know, choking on easy plays like the overtime game in Toronto. And, you know, it's one of those things that, as much as it's disappointing, that the best thing for him, I think, is finding his way onto a new team to get a fresh start. I don't like seeing him move on. I actually like Lindholm a lot as a player.
Me too.
But, you know, it's one of those where, like, if he had signed the $8-year, $9 million, whatever contract that was, that presented to him in the off season, like that would have been perfectly okay in my books. But you know, it, as the season is progressing, then like that kind of an offer makes no sense anymore. And you know, it's more like, well, maybe just change for change's sake is the better option for both sides on this. And you know, it sucks, but you know, when your team is vastly underperforming, you kind of have to be forced into making things happen that you don't necessarily planned or intend on doing.
Yeah. You know, last year, people, for all the criticism that Lindholm got, which, you know, was fair, he, when the Flames won, Elias Lindholm was a point of game player with a plus 20 in the plus minus. And I mean, take plus minus for what you will. This, I'm just looking up this year. Last five games, he's got 2 points. Just going through here. Hang on. I'm trying to look at the stats here. Yeah, like he had 3 points in the first game, which was a win against Winnipeg. He had his the game against Dallas on the 1st of November. He had 2 points. He hasn't had a point since. He's had a point in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games this year, and 2 multi-point games. It's not working for him. I think the Flames need to find a way to get the weight of the world off his shoulders, and I hope he prospers in whatever he does, because I've always believed that Elias Lindholm is a damn good player. But I know a lot of people are going to say just because it was Johnny and Matt and Matthew Tkachuk that he got that Selkie. I think he earned it in and of itself. I think he's been a guy. I still think he's a damn good hockey player. And I think he will succeed in wherever he goes.
Oh, I agree. And that's where I think like this player will have a market of 31 teams looking for his services. It's just a matter of finding the right situation for him and the right return. And that's where like a return with Johnny in Columbus might make a lot of sense, just due to the fact that Columbus has a dearth of really good young players and young prospects and, you know, good draft picks. So, you know, they're trying to get Gaudreau going after him struggling for a while too. So,
yeah, we'll see. I still don't think this will happen, but let's just throw this out here. Gaudreau coming back to Calgary for Jonathan Huberdeau.
I honestly would not mind that for one reason only. 1 year less, $1 million less.
Yeah, and I think if Johnny ever writes a book, he's going to regret what happened in Calgary for sure.
Yeah.
He left. I think he put himself in a position to not succeed.
Yeah, he literally shot himself in the foot. Like there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, frankly, like he could have retired a god here, basically.
Yep.
In the same conversation with Fleury and Iginla, and instead he's going to be remembered as basically the modern version of Kent Nilsson.
Yeah.
Which, okay, good for you. And, you know, like if he came back, sure. I personally would not go out of my way to go for that. But, you know, if it meant dumping Huberdeau's contract, and nothing against Huberdeau himself, at this point, it's just contract wise, you know, just getting the extra year off and the $1 million cheaper for Gaudreau, like that'd be worth it just for that.
Yeah. My other worry, though, is I don't think Kekalainen can make a trade right now. I think he is handcuffed in terms of after that Mike Babcock fiasco. Other than the general manager we will talk about in a moment here, his seat in the general manager chair is the hottest probably in the National Hockey League right now. But
honestly, I've thought that Kekalainen has done really well with Columbus, considering that it's Columbus and the parameters of, you know, basically being in a America's version of Edmonton, you know, to be blunt, where like nobody's going, oh, I want to go play in Columbus, you know, like nobody other than Gaudreau ever has been enthusiastic like that for Columbus. And yeah, it's one of those where, like, considering all of that, I think that the Blue Jackets have done extremely well under Kekalainen, and it's just that Babcock couldn't, you know, stop being himself. And
speaking of gods and legends and all of that, this weekend and Monday, Mike Vernon will be officially inducted into the National Hockey League Hall of Fame. And did the Flames, are the Flames doing anything about, like, I know they retired his number and gave him a ceremony a long time ago, but it really feels like they have, I mean, they're honoring Mika Kiprusoff this year, but they're not, do they have any plans for Mike Vernon?
Not that I'm aware. I am a little baffled by that myself. Like, you would think that they'd have some sort of big hubbub about him entering the Hall of Fame, and perhaps they might have a ceremony before the next home game, but we'll see. I don't know, frankly.
Yeah. It is a little
It seems out of place. Like, he should have that, but we'll see.
I think, you know, I think he did get a, his, the end of the Mike Vernon era in Calgary didn't go well, but he did get the, you know, that 11, it was an 11 game losing streak back in 1986, and a little young goaltender, not unlike a Dustin Wolf, came in and saved the day, saved the season for 1986. And that was Mike Vernon, of course. He was the goalie that got the Flames to the final in 86. In 1989, in that first round of the playoffs against the Canucks, there was a massive upset. If it were not for Mike Vernon's save on both Tony Tanti and Stan Smeal, that team would have looked, that the history of this organization would look a lot different. So I think Vernon does deserve his respect. And of course, he did have a second run with the Flames, of course, before.
Late, yeah, 99-2000.
Yeah. But so the Flames fans, I would just encourage you, like, this isn't, you know, I still would say probably Kiprusoff was the better overall goalie, but Mike Vernon contributed to this organization, and he deserves his recognition for sure. And I hope that the Flames do something to honor him, because he deserves that standing ovation for getting into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, like, when it came out that he was getting inducted, I'm like, well, that's about damn time. Yeah. Like, he should have been inducted in my books about 10 years ago, but, you know, at least he finally has joined the group of all the other really top tier goaltenders in NHL history. And, you know, like, up until recently, he was in the top 10 in wins all time. Like, you know, you have to be pretty damn good, regardless of what teams you're playing on, to get into that stratosphere of goaltender.
Yeah. Yeah. He deserves the recognition, and hopefully the Flames organization and the Flames fans have that opportunity to do that. In terms of with the Flames specifically, do we have anything else that we need to chat about?
Not really, other than I just want to throw this out moving forward, because, like, the Florida Panthers are my second favorite team and have been pretty much since they came in the league. And seeing Jonathan Huberdeau and the recent call-up of Martin Pospisil is the only guy on the Flames team that is the type of player that Huberdeau actually meshes with, where Pospisil always is driving the net constantly and mucking it up with the goaltenders. That is one thing I'd like to see tried out moving forward, is Huberdeau with Pospisil, just to see if that chemistry could work, because just for style of player, that is the type of guy that Huberdeau likes working with the most.
I think this guy, I mean, we talked about he may be a fourth line winger last week. The more I watch him, I see a lot more of that upside.
Yeah, he's impressed me since getting the recall. Like I saw a little bit of this kind of thing in Stockton a bit, and then with the Wranglers a bit. But like he seems to like now that he's injury free and actually getting on a roll with things, you're starting to see more of his actual game emerge. And, you know, that's why I'm curious to see if there's might be more there because, the archetype of all the players that Huberdeau's ever worked well with is exactly the type of style that Pospisil will bring. So, you know, it might be a weird marriage that works. And, you know, like, I don't think anybody penciled Zari in with Kadri and Sharon Govich to start the year, but, you know, that seems to be working like gangbusters thus far.
Yeah. You know, back to, that was interesting, just back to the Huberdeau mention, that one picture that I will take away, not only the forlorn look that the Jonathan Huberdeau had, but just right beside him was Connor Zary drinking his water. He kind of had his back towards Huberdeau. And I mean, I don't think that was intentional on Zary's part, but that looked like a guy that was a complete confident and ready to go National Hockey League player.
Yeah.
I think that is just an interesting juxtaposition, and maybe the position that the Flames are in this I'll throw the word transition period in, you know, where we're seeing a little bit more of a youth idea here.
The R word without using the R word.
Yeah, there he is. Yeah. We'll wait and see where this team is. I think the Flames need to rebuild. Yes. I've been pushing back, and I'll just reiterate what I've been saying before. There's a difference between rebuilding and tanking and intentionally losing. And 0% of professional sports teams that have actually went into tank intentional lose mode have actually been successful in rebuilding a franchise to a consistent
winning. See Edmonton and Buffalo and Arizona. Like those three teams tanked hard for years. And like, they're still, all three of them are garbage.
Yeah. Speaking of Edmonton, you have a way of a transition, Matt.
Yep.
What a week it was with Edmonton. Well, first of all, you get
the most hilarious game of the last 10 years.
Yeah. Well, there was two hilarious games this week in Edmonton land. The first funny game was the one in Vancouver, where they started off out shooting the Canucks 19-2 in the first period, and three goals in 3 minutes on Stuart Skinner, and the Oilers are all of a sudden down 3-0. That goes to a 6-2 game, which included a Jay Woodcroft ejection, a Connor McDavid could have getting not one, not two, not three, but probably four penalties within 3 minutes, trying to get into a fight with JT Miller, trying to get into a fight with Sam Lafferty, and Darnell Nurse losing it as well. So that was game one of the hilarity moment. Game two of the hilarity moment was the Sharks, and probably the one that I think everybody is laughing hardest at.
Well, and like the San Jose Sharks, for anybody who's not paying attention, are basically one of the all-time worst teams in NHL history currently.
They're certainly going down.
Yeah, they're shooting for that record. Like, they're bad on a level that's really unprecedented in the last 30 years. Like, you have to go all the way back to the 92-93 San Jose Sharks, coincidentally, for a team that was just this spectacularly awful.
Yeah.
And then they beat the Oilers.
Yeah. And they beat the Oilers 3-2. But then the Oilers play Seattle on Saturday night and don't allow 20 shots. They got out to a 4-0 lead. They beat the Kraken 4-1. And this morning, Sunday morning, for those that are not listening on the day, Jay Woodcroft is fired and Dave Manson is fired. And of course, the one of the photos that are the pictures that go is going to be forever etched in internet memory is the Dave Manson saying to Jay Woodcroft, "I think we're done," basically. Or Dave Manson asking, "Are we done?" And Jay Woodcroft saying, "Yes." Turns out that they were right. Replaced with Connor McDavid's junior hockey coach, Chris Knobloch, who was coaching in the New York Rangers organization with Hartford, and Paul Coffey is going from whatever job he had in the Edmonton organization to behind the bench.
The circus continues.
It is. This is an. First of all, like, I actually like Jay Woodcroft. I think he's a good coach. I think he's a guy that should land on his feet rather quickly. And I think,
yeah, I actually have been surprised with him. I didn't like him at the start. I thought he was way in over his head, and he actually surprised me by being an effective coach. But honestly, like, frankly, the Oilers needed Daryl Sutter type. Where somebody to come in and just kick everybody's ass, and you know, they need it, because you know, like, as much as like we complain about the Flames being a bunch of individuals, like, that they're on like a completely different planet of individuality than the Flames, where like there is no team, there is Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and 18 other people, and yeah, like, it's embarrassingly bad.
Well, and there was a couple of really good tweets today. One was from Ryan Pinder that pointed out that the new CEO was Connor McDavid's agent, Jeff Jackson. The big free agent signing of the offseason was Connor McDavid's junior winger, Connor Brown. And he is not, has he played? Like, I haven't seen him. Like, I think if he's played, he's played very sparingly. He doesn't seem to be in the middle of anything. And now you bring in Connor McDavid's coach. It makes you wonder who's running this organization, or why they're trying to cater to Connor McDavid so much.
And frankly, I think that the honest answer is that at the end of next season, I think that Leon Draisaitl, if he isn't traded, is going to walk. And I think that Connor McDavid will probably end up following him out the door, because... you know, like, they've had how many years now? 8 since they've had the two of them.
And they've had 5 coaches. This will be their 5th coach.
And, you know, you look at Crosby, and, you know, having him and Malkin on the team, that, you know, the Penguins had enough there to find the other parts that they needed, and they ended up going on and winning the Stanley Cup, and then 2 more a few years later. Other teams like Colorado, when they got McKinnon, it took them a little bit longer, but they got there. Ovechkin got his cup. You have the two best scorers in the NHL together. The Edmonton Oilers should already have 2 or 3 Stanley Cups if they were built correctly. But nobody realized in that organization that, hey, there are 18 other people, not just those two guys. And, you know, and you're starting to see, like, their reliance on Draisaitl and McDavid, and playing them 28, 29 minutes a night is starting to cause them to not be very good now. And, like, McDavid has not looked good at all this season, before the injury or since. And Draisaitl's been fairly pedestrian for him. And, you know, playing them as much as they did only has a short lifeline of being able to get away with that before you literally run them into the ground. You know, like, it's looking like everything's just gonna implode on Edmonton very shortly, if it's not already in the middle of doing so.
Yeah, it was fascinating to me that a lot of people had the Oilers believing that the Oilers will catch Vegas. Like, here are some questions that just looking back, for the people that believed in the Oilers, what evidence did you have that they were an honest Stanley Cup contender that were close to
Vegas? I know. Matthias Ekholm is a decent defenseman, but he is not going to win you a Stanley Cup by himself. And frankly,
well, and that's quite frankly, Matt, that was actually a really bad trade that nobody is talking about. Tyson Berry has a better plus minus stat, has better stats right now than Matthias Ekholm. And I think Seager is going to turn out to be a damn good player. And you gave up a first on a team that has not drafted well the last, really not great. I mean, you could argue that Evan Bouchard is working out, but I think Evan Bouchard is playing way over his head right now. I don't think he is. I think he should be a 5-6-4 defenseman, and they are playing him in a top two role, and he's not ready for it.
No, I agree. And they did kind of the same thing with Darnell Nurse.
Yep.
Throwing him up in the lineup.
Who's getting paid $9 million.
Oh, I know. For basically being a $3 million defenseman, if not lower than that. And no, and it's, well, Edmonton, frankly, like you have to go, like for getting like second round picks and beyond, like just, you have to go practically back to Jeff Petrie to find anybody that they actually developed that was their own guy.
Vincent Desharnais is probably the only one that you can say.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and like that's a long stretch though. Like Petrie was drafted in like 2008 or something like that. Like, you know, and that's for second round and beyond. Like that's like a decade plus of picks and getting absolutely nothing. Well, no wonder your team is not doing well. You know, like you actually need second, third, fourth line guys. Like, you know, like if basically the Flames and the Oilers have opposite problems, like if you put McDavid and Draisaitl on our team and, you know, take out the first line and just keep the rest, like that team instantly is the best team in the NHL. But it's one of those where like the Oilers have zero depth at all. And, you know, you're starting to see, you know, that like they are a paper tiger and always have been. And because the top two are great, but you have nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked Zach Hyman, but and I've always liked Ryan Nugent. I think those two are solid. But after that, their best bottom six forward has been Warren Fogle. Derek Ryan has been nowhere near the Derek Ryan that he was in Calgary. And you got Adam Early, you got Sam Gagne, who, like, a lot of these guys are kind of in the last legs, and you just, like, and they haven't been able to field a quality with the salary cap problems that they're having. They can barely put 20 players on the ice. I just think there's so much work to do, and this was not on Woodcroft.
No. And it's one of those where, like, I think that anybody looking at the Oilers as like a cup contender was being blinded by the fact that McDavid and Draisaitl are two of the best players in the NHL, and not seeing like systematically, like if you take those two guys out, like they're the worst team in the league. And like now that those two guys are not playing quite as well, they're right near the bottom where they should be. And it's frustrating to see because, you know, like the last thing that Edmonton needs is another number one overall pick to get, you know, and try and ruin. But, you know, it's one of those things that, like, I think in the next few years, that's going to be their destiny again, is being a basement team that has to hope to get another super talent guy like McDavid. And I honestly don't see him sticking around, or Draisaitl. You know, much like Zadorov having enough of his team being, you know, like nobody actually pitching in, you know, like it must be frustrating for those two looking at like basically all the stars from around the NHL vying for Stanley Cups. And here they are toiling in the basement, you know, literally wasting their career on a deadbeat team.
Yeah, it's quite a mess there. And it's just like, I there was a lot of talk on social media, I think today, that putting McDavid in this coaching killer position. And I'm not sure I buy that. This has been an
organizational issue. Yeah, this is literally the owner down level problem. Like, this isn't a team problem. This is a ownership general manager problem. And you know, like being stuck in the past, looking at the Oilers of the 80s, where, yeah, they could go just go out and score seven goals in a game because they had an all-star team. Yeah, sure, that's one way of doing it. But, you know, since then, teams have actually learned that how to play defense. And, you know, the Oilers have never actually, like, through all the eras since then, have never really, other than the one year they had Chris Pronger, have not actually focused on team defense whatsoever. And, like, they have been terrible since, you know, the last Stanley Cup they had. And, like, they need to actually get with the times that, you know, you actually have to have 20 players that are competent players in the NHL, not just relying on your handful of superstars and, oh, well, we'll just outscore the other team. Like, it just doesn't work like that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, they continue to struggle on the things that allow you to win. And yeah, that, you know, they will always compete for the Art Ross Trophy, but the object of this exercise is to win the Stanley Cup. And until they actually figure that out, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, to contrast number one overall from 2016 to, or 2015 with number two, Jack Eichel, you know, he struggled mightily with a similarly bad franchise. It then finally got dealt and pretty much instantaneously picked up some silverware. Yeah. And, you know, like, I'm sure that both Draisaitl and McDavid are going, well, hey, he could do it.
And one of those quiet parts not said out loud, Matt, I always look back at that Vegas Oilers series. Jack Eichel outplayed Connor McDavid, and not by this much. It was a significant margin that Jack outplayed Connor McDavid.
Yeah. I would actually take Eichel over McDavid at this point. And because Eichel actually plays defense. And
I think Eichel will be in the starting position this year.
Yeah, like, you look at, like, Alex Ovechkin, like, for years he was basically what McDavid and Draisaitl are, until he had that meeting with Wayne Gretzky to ask him, well, how the heck do I actually, you know, because our team always loses in the first round, why is that? And then, oh, well, you actually have to play responsible defensively and lead by example. Ovechkin changed his game. The Capitals win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, until McDavid and Draisaitl figure that out too, like, you know, like, defense wins championships in all sports. And, you know, it's a fairly basic thing. Like, you know, you can't get away with it. Like, it does not matter. Unless you're the 1980s Oilers, where you have, like, five guys that are ridiculously talented, where you can literally just score at will and who cares, you know, then you can get away with it. But that happens once, maybe, in a sports history where a team has that kind of a collection, and then never again.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and this is, again, just to go back to the Tankathon, this is your warning sign of what potentially could happen when you are tanking, is you have a losing mentality, and it is hard, hard, hard to get out of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sure, you know, the whole conversation about getting a top three pick, yeah, that's great. You would love.
Well, take a look at Buffalo, for example, because we mentioned the three of them, Edmonton and Arizona, struggling for so long, and it took until they got Rasmus Dahlin and then Owen Power, plus some of the other guys that they have on the blue line, to finally start to come out of that ditch. When they learn that, oh, you actually have to play deep in defense in order to, you know, you can have all the shiny scorers that you want, but you need the rest of the team to actually get forward. And now, finally, Buffalo is looking like they're starting to come out of it after being, you know, in the same pile since 2010.
Well, and I think one thing that we, with the Flames, the last few years, just to bring this back to the Flames here as we're wrapping up, the Flames have done really well. Where one area that the Flames have done really well and where the Oilers haven't is drafting in the mid to late rounds successfully. Dustin Wolf, seventh round. Andrew Mangiapane, fourth round. Johnny Gaudreau was a later round pick. Dylan Dubé was not a first round pick. And I know he's not playing well right now, but he's a guy that has been in the NHL.
Well, even looking at like Soloviev, Rasmus Anderson, Oliver Shillington, like all of those guys were not first round draft picks. And, you know, even you're looking at some of the Flames' top prospects, Pettersson on the farm, he's like a fourth or sixth round pick himself. Poirier, he was drafted in the third round. Kuznetsov, he was drafted in the second round. Like, you know, and you can keep going through. Klapko is a free agent. Like, you know, you're finding other ways of supplementing. It's one of those like where you have, it's important to hit your first rounders, but you also need to hit on some of the depth guys too.
Yeah, you can't go home after the first round of the draft. You can't say, no, I got Connor Bedard and I'm going home now.
No, because like as much as like Connor Bedard's absolutely amazing for Chicago, you know, you look at the rest of the Blackhawks team and they're basically the same garbage team they were last year.
Yeah,
and like it's gonna take them a couple of years, even with Connor Bedard, to even sniff the playoffs, just because, you know, one guy, even as ridiculously talented as Bedard is, cannot drag a team to the playoffs by himself.
Yeah. So it's certainly interesting. It's very interesting times in Alberta for sure.
Yeah, well, that's where, you know, you look at teams around the league and it's like, who has a lot of draft picks? And how many of our guys can we trade there? Hey, Arizona has 10 second round draft picks in the next 3 years. Let's go for them.
Well, even the Kraken. Yeah, there are some teams that you can make some moves with for sure. So it is fascinating. But
Especially like with the Flames being in the situation they are, because they have been so effective over the last like 6, 7, 8 years of getting those good guys from the second round and beyond, getting just additional draft picks, you know, and having more bullets in the chamber to try and hit the target, you know, like that is what's going to make this team, you know, into a contender again, is being able to get as many of those draft picks and actually capitalizing on them moving forward.
Well, and I also, you know, just I think for the city, and I think one of the things that I think also would be good is a run of the playoffs for the Calgary Wranglers. And, you know, we would be remiss to point out no Dustin Wolf, no Connor Zeri, and they beat the San Diego Gulls this week 12-2. So this is a team that, you know, you look at the Wranglers.
They're the best team in the league.
Yeah.
I think they're 8-1-1 now or something like that. Like they're gangbusters right now.
Yeah, they are. So, I mean, yeah, you got like a good playoff run or a championship run, I think would do good for the city. It would do good for the market, for the Wranglers as well. So, I think just, you know, with all the darkness around the Flames right now and all the kind of the gloom and doom, a good Wrangler playoff run, I think, would help. Let's see here. I'm just looking at the standings.
And I just want to mention one thing about the Flames' drafts over the last few years. For a while, they weren't really drafting a ton of defensemen because they were focusing on getting more forwards, which made sense at the time. But the last few years, they've been getting quite a little stockpile of really top-notch defensemen coming up. Soloviev looks like a really decent third-pairing defenseman, soon to be in the NHL. Like, the couple of games he played, he did not look out of place. Jeremy Poirier was drafted as basically an all-offense, no-defense guy, but he's learned how to play defense, too. Etienne Morin, the Flames second-rounder from this past year, is going to be a monster for this team. He hits like a bus and he can then score on you while your body's laying on the ice. So, you know, he is a dynamo, and he honestly is my favorite pick from the Flames over the last 5 years, Morin. So, like, the Flames do have a good crop of young guys coming up. So, you know, like, it's one of those, like, where, like, they will need to add more, and, like, especially if they can get some more draft picks and things through free agency and trade. But, you know, it's one of those, they already have a good foundation ready to go. So, you know, it's not like they're starting from square one on that front.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And then Darren Haynes pointed that out as well on the X as well. Two other things that we should mention before we wrap up here, Matt. We didn't mention that Dryden Hunt was placed on waivers, cleared waivers on the same day that Jack Campbell was placed on waivers. So he's back with the Wranglers. I would suspect that we don't see Dryden Hunt back with the Flames this year. I think he gave it the old college try, as Dan would say, but I think he's more suited to the AHL game than the NHL game.
Yeah, he's really like your prototypical filler guy if you need just a body.
Yeah.
And, you know, if not, then he can just go lead the AHL team to more success, because he is a serviceable middle six guy in the AHL. So,
yeah. And unfortunately, there was a passing this weekend. Samuel Murray, a goaltending coach back with the Vancouver Giants, passed away here. He was part of the Memorial Cup team, back involved in Team Canada as well. He passed away yesterday, I believe. Here, sorry, I just want to give you 1 second here. But I just wanted to acknowledge, before we closed out here, wanted to acknowledge that, I mean, he did make an impact in the WHL. He did spend some time with Team Canada as well as a goaltending consultant. So, very unfortunate news that he passed away, over the weekend here. So we just wanted to acknowledge that, here as well.
Yeah, it's always hard when things like that happen. Like, also today, Roman Čechmánek, former Flyers and Kings goalie, passed away.
Yes, so that's right. That was another one that unfortunately passed away, yeah. When I saw that name, the Flames had a Roman Čechmánek back a number of years ago that played center.
Roman Červenka.
Červenka, that's who, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was a mediocre second, third line forward for the 1 year, and then he went back to Europe. He was just too slow.
Yes, that was a Jay Feaster signing, I believe.
Yeah, he was a good player. He just was too slow for the NHL, and that was literally the only problem with him. Otherwise, he probably would still be in the NHL right now.
Fair, yeah. Yeah, he had some skill. Just trying to find... here, just give me 1 second here.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, is there anything else while I'm looking at this or looking this up? Is there anything else we need to chat about?
Not really. The thing I always try to focus on when, you know, seasons like this happen is that, you know, like, as frustrating as it is, like, the last time the Flames had a season that went off the rails like this, was the 2015-2016 season, and that ended up in the Flames getting Matthew Tkachuk in the first round. So, you know, as much as it's tough to endure the team basically in a significant amount of turmoil, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, it will get better, and it's just a matter of enduring the short-term pain until the Flames can find their next star player. And, you know, they'll unfortunately come on draft day either this year or next year or the year after, and, you know, just have to be kind of patient, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, it just take this one game at a time, and, you know.
Well, and the thing is that like the hardest thing that a lot of teams that go into like the complete teardown rebuilds tend to have is finding the good quality second, third, and fourth line guys and the depth defensemen. Because you can always draft the star guy in the first round with your first overall pick. But, you know, like the Flames do have that solid crop of guys like Peltier and Zari and Coronado already, you know, in the NHL and ready to go. So, you know, like it's just a matter of getting additional guys to add on to that to turn the team over and carry on.
Fair, yeah. By the way, it's not Sam Murray. My apologies. It was Sean Murray that passed away. Sean Murray that we have to give our condolences to. That's why I was stumbling around there because I was looking for Samuel. His name was actually Sean Murray.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Makes sense.
Sean Murray, rest in peace, as well as Roman Chickmanic. Well, Matt, it was a good episode. How, for the Firesiders, how do we follow you?
On Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, I think, YouTube, all at firesidechat.ca. And firesidechat.ca is our website. So anywhere you can find your podcasts, we're pretty much there.
Yeah, you can follow us the same way, Shifts and Pucks on X. You can follow Sean, Beardy Canuck 03, Tyler TNOBLE, Chris Schneidz, SCHNEIDZ. Devin Gordhouse 09, I am KEVULE. We cover both the Flames and the Canucks. We will be doing a Canucks specific podcast probably Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm assuming that we have figured out the schedule. We'll post that. We'll keep you abreast in terms of Flames scheduling. We're trying to just schedule that. We normally do that Thursdays, but I also am working the next couple of Thursdays, so we'll figure that out. So keep an eye out for that. But Matt, it was great to do this. It's great to chat and great to have a crossover episode.
Yeah. Anytime.
And how do you always end that, Matt?
As always, go Flames go.
Thanks, everyone. We will talk to you all very soon. Bye for now.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.